diving deep into the silence of your own being. Feel there the presence of light, the vibration of spirit, the intelligence of omniscience. This is your true and lasting identity. Feel yourself to be identified with that. The little body bubble is but an extension and an instrument for that light. Seeing that body bubble as but a small part of who you are. Become aware of the vast, infinite expanse of your true spirit. See your earthly problems in proper perspective. See them as extensions of the prism that is the mind and the body, that takes the pure white light of spirit and then shines all the tiny little rays of multicolored experiences that we call our earthly experiences. Then turn the mind's eye toward that great light that is ever shining and residing within you, and so much greater, so much more than anything that the human mind can conceive of, but our intuitive mind can. We can know it. We can experience it. We can become so identified with it that we realize that it is our true self. And with that enlightened mind, let us all pray. O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all Religions,
I bow to all of you,
Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only King. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Over the last couple of weeks for me, an injunction came about 2 weeks ago that said to take an extended time in seclusion and quietness. And so I tested that spirit out over the last couple of weeks, and it seems to always come back the same. In fact, this last week, early in the week, the inner knowing came and said, you must do this. So, what can I do? The injunction came to take 1 year in silent retreat. And no verbal communication during that time. I then started looking into possible ways and means of doing this, never having done anything like this before. Came in contact with the retreat center down near Castle Rock, which is toward the Oregon border, about an hour and a half from Portland, about 2.5 hours from here. And they had built a cabin this last year for teachers of Dharma
They're more of a Buddhist orientation, but they are universal in their outlook. In fact, the founder of it was originally attracted to Master and took self-realization lessons and then went to live in Ananda. He liked the Ananda community very much, but he couldn't connect with Kriyananda. So he left that place and started this on 5 acres of property, wooded property, that's adjacent to other farmland and wooded property. It's a beautiful setting. And this last year, as I say, they built this cabin for prolonged stays. And so I went down and spoke with him, and he was enthusiastic about my coming. There's a Tibetan Lama who's currently staying in the retreat center, or the retreat house, and his stay will be up September, the 1st of September, end of August, and so become available the 1st of September. So I'm picking up the end of the string of intuition and following it as I feel guided. We will continue to meet, of course, at the different centers and carry on with getting together as groups and meditation. Once a month, we'll have silent satsang down at the retreat center. They anticipated that. I asked him, I said, people may want to come down and spend some time. He says, oh yes, we fully expected that. So they have a building set aside for that purpose. A beautiful little building that's all windowed and has carpeting and looks out over a meadow. And so once a month, perhaps the second Saturday each month, everyone can come down and we can have some silent meditation time together. And it'll be good for all of us to be quiet for a little while. So that's my news. And it's interesting. It's I will just say that it came to me that is both for my own sadhana, but it is also very definitely a feeling towards society and towards this movement and consciousness as a whole. And when I look out on this world and I see the cross currents of consciousness and energy and all that's going on, I see a great emptiness, a great void, especially in the younger people. What is the purpose of life, this life? They materially have had most everything as a group. And yet, what are you living for? Friedrich Nietzsche once said, you are free, but what are you free for? And it's the question that we all come up against. What are we free for? Why do we live? Why do we draw breath? And so the idea is there that there must need some change. And within this work of consciousness, there is the idea that if one is lifted up, as Jesus said, if I be lifted up, shall lift up all mankind with me, that there is an upward movement as one person or a group of people make movement upwards. And it applies to everyone, of course, but it seems to me that this is a good time to do this. So, that's it.
So talk fast.
Get all my words in now, huh? Get my average up. Of course, as when I went to India, I felt very much that as I went to some of these sacred places, that the blessings and the benefits not only came to me, but I felt those blessings and those benefits extend out to everyone. And I fully expect this to be the same also. So, through inner attunement, Master used to stress the idea of inner attunement with the teacher, with the guru. And through that inner attunement, it means going inside and feeling the presence of that one within your own consciousness. And feeling the benefit, feeling the spiritual vibration coming out from that one. And in that way, we can take full spiritual benefit of these masters who have come before us and who send us their blessings constantly. We did a house blessing over in Sunnyside for Jerry and Lois. Lois had decorated the meditation room beautifully, drawing a large silver five-pointed star with a blue circle and a gold circle around that on a slanted roof. It's upstairs. and set up a temple, and it's just absolutely marvelous. And the feeling in that room is just wonderful. So all were invited, and several came, and we spent time last night dedicating the room and meditating and chanting, and it was a lovely time, a lovely time. And when we make this the first temple, then we create a spot in our home that becomes a temple, becomes charged with those spiritual vibrations. And then it just extends out and it consecrates the whole home. And then, of course, the ripple effect just goes out from there. So if we all become intent upon that, creating our homes into temples, it doesn't mean we don't live there, that we don't have fun or laugh or all of those things. That's all of God also. But first and foremost, in the mind, we hold it that this is, that life is sacred. Our life is sacred. And by holding that idea first, everything else becomes blessed. The true meaning behind when Jesus says that seek ye first the kingdom of heaven. All these things, other things, shall be added unto you. So, I'd like to read from Master's Lessons, The Cause and Cure of Nervousness. You're a bundle of nerves. They are like little tubes through which you drink in material things. But they are not meant to bring you only material things. They are also meant to enable you to drink in the eternal nectar of God. You have a bundle of nerves in the ears, eyes, taste, and every sense. And what are you doing with that? You are probably drinking in nothing but material things. Nervousness means to be nerve-bound, to identify your happiness with the state of the nerves. Each one of you has a certain kind of nerve response. You have your individual likes and dislikes. You think that you love this and that. Mexicans think that they love chilies. Hindus think that they love curries. Each nationality has some special desires. But that is due to national tendencies of nerve response, sometimes called nervousness. For nervousness does not necessarily mean restlessness. It also means using or responding to certain sets of sensations produced by the nerves. Any sensation that controls you is deadly. Let no sensation in your body control you. Inharmonious noise creates nervousness and disease. Peace and harmony are necessary to maintain health. People would live longer if they did not have so much noise about them. Om is a soothing sound. It is the holiest of sounds. There is another form of nervousness, the soul's nervousness. The soul is so identified with the body that it has absolutely forgotten its real nature. You are so identified with your nerves that you think that you are nothing but a bundle of sensations. All thoughts are nothing but sensibilities which cluster around your soul. Physiological nervousness can be destroyed by eating more fruits and other good foods and not overeating. And mental nervousness can be destroyed by reading good books, cultivating good company, and good thoughts, and so forth. Soul nervousness can be destroyed only by meditation. That means transferring the attention from your nerves to the perception of infinite happiness. Don't live just in this little cage of the body. You are in the cage and also outside the cage. Think through all minds. Feel through all feelings. Work through all hands. Why not? This is real. Yes, in meditation, you transfer your attention from the bundle of sensations connected with your body to the infinite nature, which is your true self. Every night, God takes your attention away from these nerve tubes and makes you forget all the sensibilities of the body. Meditation, practiced in the right way, in the way that self-realization teaches, is very important. Lift your consciousness from mortal nervousness. Those who remain in the self do not feel any sensation in the body. If you meditate, you will feel that behind your muscular power, there is a greater power, that you are no longer merely a weak individual. As soon as the nerves control the mind, then your soul is controlled by nerves and material things, and thus you produce the miseries that go with material things. Many people are clothes consciousness, nerve-bound, and food-bound, and they forget the infinite behind this body. You are really infinite electricity. You are immortal. You cannot be killed by anything. You are infinite limitlessness throbbing behind this body. You're a child of the infinite. So do not allow a little nervousness to bother you. Never think of yourself as a man or a woman. You are the infinite. You are the electricity in the bulb of flesh. You are not the bulb. The electricity goes back into the dynamo when the bulb is gone. You are not this little bulb. Still, you exist, for you are the dynamo. Do not think of yourself as a little person who becomes blind or deaf or lame. You are the infinite intelligence behind this body, the infinite joy behind this body. So you must do away with nervousness, which makes you think that you are the slave of this body. You are really free from identification with the nerves. You should be using them only to drink the honey of the infinite. I think many of us are bound by nervousness. It becomes a habit of the mind. Nervousness is first produced by identification with the body, as Master talked about here, channeling all the life energy through the nerves of this body, and identification with this body, and by extension, identification with things of this world. This creates attachment. Now, attraction is not necessarily attachment. Those are two different things. You can have a flow of attraction that moves through you, but not be attached to those things. You remain separate, not identified with them. There are souls that exist in this world, realized souls, who are not non-entities. This is a difficult point to sometimes get across in this path. That realization of God does not make you a non-entity. When we talk about destruction of the ego, it does not mean becoming a nothing. Rather, it means losing that idea that keeps us separate from the infinite consciousness. You see, that is the point of separation within the consciousness, and is when you think you are separate from the light. That exercise that we did in the beginning of seeing this body as a tiny bubble of expression of your infinite light, and turning around and seeing this infinite light and its true expanse is your true self. It is like the pyramid, or excuse me, like the iceberg, thank you, that exists with a tiny little tip above the surface, and below that surface is a great, great expanse. You are the same way. This body is the tiny tip that is exposed above the surface, and what your spirit is the vast expanse that is below it. You cannot measure the iceberg by that tiny tip that it's shining above. Rather, you must dive deep into consciousness in order to realize this vast spirit of which you are a part. The body itself is not the problem. It is this attachment through body identification. We have come to believe that we are this body and nothing but this body. What happens as a result of that? This body is subject to injury, to growing old, to disease, to death, to poverty, to social injustice, and on down the line. And when you identify with this body in that way, you become identified with these all these problems that go along with it. So you see, there is no way to become identified with the body through attachment and avoid any of these diseases, all of these things that cause us dis-ease. And as a result of that, we become a nervous package. This whole body gets wrapped up in its nerves. We think, well, what will happen if I lose this job? What will happen if I become embarrassed in front of my friends? What will happen if I lose some money? What will happen if I get sick? What will happen if I grow old? What will happen if I die? And even if we're not thinking of these things consciously, there's a part of us who is thinking about it unconsciously. And as a result, it begins to create a nervous condition within our body. And this gets extended out through our emotions and our thoughts. And so it turns into a feedback loop that out of thoughts of impoverishment, out of thoughts of lack, out of thoughts of things that can harm us, we inject into the nerves this nervous energy. What will happen? And it puts us on edge because we want to protect ourselves. We want to be ready for fight or flight. And as a result, we're constantly pumping in the chemicals, pumping in all the things into this body that creates a condition where we can either fight or we can run. But what happens when you're in a society where there's perceived danger all around, but there's no body response to it? You go into work every day, and you have that feeling of fear, you have that feeling of distress, and yet there's nobody that you can punch, or you get fired. That's a consequence of that. And you can't run away, or you get fired for that. So you're caught in betwixt and between. And it's all because the mind has perceived some threat. And it is a threat to this body. Now, we have responsibilities in this world, that is true. And we try to fulfill those responsibilities. But when we become attached to that, is the root cause for that problem. That's where we must go and take the acts of divine intelligence and will and take it to the roots of this problem, the roots of ignorance. We must cut away. Yes, we must fulfill our duties. That is why we are here. We must be able to provide for ourselves and for our family. We must be able to take care of ourselves and comport ourselves in a good and a noble way. But to do it without attachment, you see. Desire is there. I desire to have a home for myself, some shelter for myself, for my family, for those who depend on me. That's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. But when we become totally identified with that, see ourselves as the doer, then we start to move into a stage of nervousness. And we pump all of this life energy in through the nerves. And it just burns out the body because oftentimes there's nothing to do with all that nervous energy. We're pumping it in all right, but there's no place to go. There's no one we can take on in that way. And so we can live this life of quiet desperation. To go to the roots means to go to the root of attachment. I am not the doer. I have duties to do, but I am not those duties. I am not the one who can fulfill them. I can direct my life in a way that I think can best comport themselves to fulfilling my duties, but I leave it there. So as Krishna says in the Gita, detaching act, end from act with act content. Detaching end, the end result, from the act with the act content. Now think of yourself as trying anything new when we're learning something new. And we try to do it, and maybe we've gone bowling for the first time. And what do? The first time, we roll a strike. We think, all right, I've got this down. Look at these other people. They don't do nearly as well as I do. then the next thing we do is we really try. The first time we didn't care so much. We're just learning. Then we think, oh, I need to bowl another strike. We throw a gutter ball after gutter ball after gutter ball. Nothing seems to work because we're the ones who are trying to be in charge. If we relax and we feel that intelligent life force flowing through us and allow that to express itself through us in the form of this new task, then we don't get in the way. You see, when we try to do it, we tighten up the body. We send that life force through the nerves and through the body in such a way that it actually gets tightened. And as a result of that, we become less effective, not more effective. I remember when I was first learning to rollerblade. Well, I hadn't been roller skating since I was a kid, when we had the old metal ones that you had the key and you tighten them up on your Oxford shoes, and you hope that they stayed on when you're going down the sidewalk. Of course, you get about halfway down the sidewalk and hit a great big crack in the sidewalk, and off you go into the grass. You hope that there's grass there to dive into. And so I got onto these roller blades, and the first thing I did, I came out of the store where we rented them down by Green Lake. I came out of the store, and I didn't even think about stopping. You know, I was going. What is there to stop? But I didn't know how to stop. So I'm rolling towards this car, and the only thing I could think of to do is put my hands up. I hit the car. Has one of these car alarms off. Suddenly the lights are going off, the horn's going off, and everything's going to pieces, and I'm trying to run away before they arrest me on these wheels. It works. So as I got accustomed to these rollerblades, what I tried to do is to relax, because I could feel my body was struggling. It was struggling with trying to get in harmony with these wheels, and I wasn't used to walking on wheels. So I just relaxed the body and felt the life force flowing through me. And as I did that, I've made fewer mistakes. And it also gave me a calmer mind in order to practice this and allow my body to learn what it needed to do in order to do this correctly. And gradually what happened is my body learned little bit, all right, when I do this, it works well, and when I do this other thing, it doesn't work so well. I end up face planted into the ground. And so I just continued to work with it. Now, if in every task we can allow that life force to flow through us, we can be the witness and the observer of that intelligent life force, to trust in that. You see, when we think we're the doer, we think this little human mind has to do everything. It has to be in on every detail and figure everything out. Now, the focus of attention in this way is to relax, to be the witness, and to pay attention to how this intelligent life force is working through us. And what we'll find is that it really has something going for it. In fact, it can do things much better. It's the intelligent life force that we allowed to make that first strike when we went bowling. And it can make strike after strike after strike if we train this body to allow this life force to move through us. But when we take energy in from the world, and then we think, oh, with this little mind, I have to direct everything. I have to do everything. We actually start to squeeze down the flow of that life force. And what happens by the end of the day? All we want to do is go home and hit the bed. We are just so tired and exhausted that we can't even believe it. Why? Because that tension has closed down the very source of intelligence and life force that we need in order to operate. When you relax, you open up the medulla. It begins to flow and flood in with life energy, and if you watch it flow through you, you become an expression of that divine intelligence of which you are a natural part. It will think of things through intuitional perception that you would have never thought of for yourself. Suddenly you'll see things in a different way. We get so close to our work sometimes that we can't really see what we're doing. If you've ever been involved in a project, as I have been, and you're working at it, working, and someplace you're stuck, and you just can't get it, you can't see it. Somebody walks up behind your shoulder and says, well, did you just try doing this and this? And you go, it works. You know? They were able to see something that we ourselves couldn't see because we were so close to the project. This being a witness to your own actions and your own activities is like being able to step back and to be that person who can see it with brand new eyes, whatever you're doing. You don't get so attached. What's the other thing that happens when you get attached? You get frustrated. You get fearful. What if I can't do this? What if I can't do it right? What if I can't do it on time? All of that also starts to close down this flow of life for energy, this flow of life force in you. And it exhausts us. And it cuts down on our intuitional abilities. In order to truly open ourselves up to intuition, we must have a calm mind. And in order to have a calm mind, we must be able to step back from what we're doing and become the witness and not see ourselves as the doer, but rather the instrument of doing. This divine intelligence flows through you. It inspires your mind. It flows through your body. It supplies you with everything that you need. Rely on that. Trust in that. Have faith in that. And if you will do this, I think you will prove to yourself, without any question of a doubt, that this will not only create any losses in your life, but will create great gains for you. You will find yourself operating smoother, better. Your co-workers will like you much better because you won't be sharp or snappy with them or have your head so buried in your work that you can't communicate with them. You will be balanced. And you will allow that flow. And when you go home at the end of the day, you will have that continuous flow of energy and life force through your body. You won't feel exhausted. And the other thing that you can do is through your work day, take time to reside within yourself. That can just be simply sitting at your desk or at your place of work and just close your eyes for a few moments if you can't take some time out and meditate. Just close your eyes. You can look down at your desk and close your eyes for a little bit. Practice breathing. Practice your Hong Sa. Feel the tension in your body melt away. Experience the flow of life force. Just sense with your mind, even now, as you're sitting here. Search at the medulla point, the place at the base of this brain, and feel the flow of life energy coming in through the medulla. Feel it flooding into your body and charging all your body cells. You will feel a tingling sensation in your arms, in your legs, in your brain, all over. Give yourself that rest. When we have a continuous outflow, we deplete ourselves. Master compared us to being a battery. And if you had a battery and were on continuous discharge, eventually the battery will become empty of any energy. But by attuning yourself in this way and stopping the outflow and focusing your attention on the inflow, you charge this body battery. And so simply feel the life force. And as you sensitize yourself, you can feel a very definite pulsation or a pressure or a feeling of flow of life energy coming in through the medulla. It comes in through the medulla and then into the brain, down the spine and out through all the nervous system. And this will charge you. And if you spend even a few minutes recharging yourself in this way, closing your eyes, silently going in, switching off all the outward going energy in your body, and practice just filling your body and filling all the cells with this life force. And then when you move in this flow of that. Now that flow can be dynamic. You're not making yourself into somebody who can't operate in this world. But rather you can operate better. And when you are in this relaxed flow, you don't make missteps. You don't say things that you don't mean because you're being more intentional about your life. You know, most of us lead our lives in a very unintentional way. We are born into this world. We learn certain habits in our family. We go off into school and then we go off into work. And oftentimes we don't give ourselves any real time to think about, who am I? What is this all about? Why am I here? What is it that I really want? What do I want out of life? How do I want to conduct myself? So many people feel as if they are being compelled into life, that they go to work because they have to, that they have to go home to a family because, well, that's just the choices they made. They have to do it. They are the living dead. But when we wake up to this inner spiritual light in life, we realize that we create our life. Our life does not create us. For the unconscious person, their life creates them, because they have not consciously brought themselves into this life. But when you live more consciously, you realize you create your life. You make choices, and you have made choices all the way down the line. I remember Jill telling me one time that somebody visited their house and they said, "Wow, gosh, this is so nice. You live close to a store, you live close to bus lines, you live in such a convenient area." She said, "Yes, that didn't happen by accident. You know, we chose this place and we wanted that kind of place." Well, how many of us really get into our lives and say, "How do I want to create my life? Here's an empty palette on which to paint. What colors do I want to use? How do I want to clothe myself? How do I want to present myself? How do I want to be in this world?" And to really move into that consciousness that this is a life that we are creating. Now, the greatest thing is to attune ourselves with the spirit first, with the light, with the peace of our own being. Attune yourself to that vibration, to that feeling, to that spirit. And then as you move out into this world through thought, and then quicken it into energy, and then create action and material things out of that, see that it comports to all of that vibrational energy that comes from the spirit. You see? When you look out around your home, does it resonate with that feeling of spirit? We did this home dedication of a temple in Sunnyside, And there Lois very intentionally created a space. She knew what she wanted, and she went about creating it. And she's very talented at this. Now, we may not all have the same kinds of talents that she does, but we know when we see something that resonates with that inner spirit and that inner vibration. If we've been meditating and we walk into a bar and there's all this either rajasic active energy that's so noisy and all the rest of it, or there's this tamasic depressed kind of energy, we know immediately on entering, this does not feel the same as when I've been meditating and in the peace and the quiet of that. Do I want to immerse myself in this kind of atmosphere? And so everything in our life, we can decide. Now, there may be some things that we can't change right away. So we don't work on the outer circumstances as we do the inner ones. And when we see this life force flowing through us, we see we have total and complete control over that. We can change our attitude. We can change our thoughts. One of the great changes that came about for me in my spiritual growth and of understanding and all of this is I went through a time when I became extremely sensitized to all the world. And I just felt the vibrations of everything that was coming to me. And it was quite difficult at times when I was around difficult places and people to be in. Gradually, by attuning myself to this inner light and this inner experience, I felt that this divine life, that this divine energy, this divine consciousness was flowing out from me. Yet I was still sensitive to what was coming toward me, but it didn't dominate my consciousness. What was more important, what was more true in most circumstances, was this outward flow. And so when you feel that flow of divine life coming through you, then you can be in some difficult circumstances and you're not dominated by it. But until we get to that point, then we should try with everything in us to surround ourselves with positive people, with positive circumstances, with things that support that vibration of light and consciousness that's within us. And this is very important. Master emphasizes this again and again. Your company that you keep is so, so important. The environment that we create around us is very important. And so we should look to those things to create an environment that really supports us. If we walk into our home and it's in total disarray and it doesn't please us at all, that's a negative psychological vibration every time we do it. But if we create a place that's a true home and we like it and we move into it, it's an uplifting moment instead. And so this is the way that we learn to make our life congruous, both on the inside and the outside, with the spiritual light and life. And then we create a temple of our home. We create a place of refuge that we can feel the peace of our own spirit. We can cast off the vibrations of the day and turn off that constant outward flow. It's difficult at first. When we're untrained and unused to doing it, maybe we just want to pass straight into unconscious sleep. Maybe we get restless when we're doing it. We just hardly can't even stand to sit still in meditation. We need to work through those things, work through them. And when we break through those barriers, then we come into that deeper level of consciousness, into that peace that surpasses all understanding. And in that, we get a cure to all nervousness. And we feel that divine life flowing out through us. And we feel it supporting us, guiding us, moving us through the day. It becomes a heavenly kingdom, even while we're involved in the day-to-day worldly activities. And there is no separation then. Our life is our temple. In the beginning, our life is our sadhana, but then our life becomes our temple, a temple of peace, a temple of light, a temple of action, but we are not the doer. That intelligent life force moves and acts through us. First, we must direct ourselves because we're not consciously aware of that divine life force. But as we advance, there's a sudden change, or perhaps a gradual change, where we get a taste here and there where that divine force, that divine life, is actually living its life through us. And there's no mistaking that for when we're trying to live our life. When we try to live our life, there's tension. There's dis-ease. When divine life is living through us, it is a flow of life force. I'd just like to stop there and see if there's any questions or comments on the things that I've spoken of tonight, or your own sadhana.
When you have the experience of living in a negative environment of any kind,
mm-hmm.
and seemingly you're unable to break the pattern of that, what are some things that you can do, David, beyond, is there anything beyond the meditation and the...
Well, first we make an assessment. What is mine, and what is within my control, and is what is outside of my control. There was one time a story of a saint, and he died and left the body. And as he went up into heavenly consciousness, he is about to enter into the pearly gates. As he was entering in, he heard the cries and the wails and the moans of those who had been sentenced into hellish consciousness. Well, he knew that he couldn't rest easy if that were the case. if all of these people were in anguish and there was anything that he could do in order to help them. As he went down into various hellish consciousness and saw all the souls who were involved there, he called to them. He says, I have a way for you out. Would you like to come with me? He was like a Pied Piper playing his flute. And some responded. They said, yes, oh, we would like so much to get out of this place. Others only complained. Some ignored him because they were so self-absorbed in their own misery. But those who were responding to him, he helped them and led them out of that hellish consciousness. The others he had to let go of because they were not yet ready in order to make that movement. So if we're in a work circumstance or if we're in a home circumstance or whatever area, we may find people who are unhappy. We ourselves may be unhappy. And in that unhappiness, we struggle to find happiness. First, we assess, what is within my control here? What am I responsible for? And what can I change? Is there something about my own outer behavior that I can change to make this right? What can I do internally to get rid of the attachments that's causing me misery within this situation? And when we've done our best within that, then we go deep inside and we ask God, what is the right thing for me to do here? Do I need to stay in this situation, or do I need to look to resolve it somehow out in the outer circumstances? Now, sometimes we're asked to stay in a situation in order to fulfill a karmic law. Other times, we're said, you are released from this. Now, that depends upon the integrity of our own soul in order to determine that. And there's no situations that are absolute black and white. So we have to go inside, get past all of our emotional responses to a situation. Get calm, and in that calmness, then ask the question. And when the answer comes back, test each spirit. Test it. Is this true? Go back again and again to that place of calmness. What is the answer that comes back to us? And sometimes it's to change the outer circumstances. Sometimes it's to change ourselves. But always within, you know, we've played a part. Whatever it is that we've gotten into, we played a part in creating those circumstances. So we must go inside and get to the roots of that has gone into creating those circumstances. But then there may be times when we say, all right, this is enough, and then we're released from it. Or some circumstance changes us, changes around us, and we're released from it in that way. But we go and we make a clear and sharp assessment. We must use our discriminative mind. And the main focus, you see, when we get into problems with people and situations, usually this is the scenario. You know what they did to me? And then there's a whole laundry list of complaints. This is who they are. They're like this, and they're like this, and they're like this, and they're like this. Wouldn't that drive you crazy too? And then you go out and you find all kinds of comrades who agree. Oh yes, that would drive me crazy too. And then we build a really royal case against the other person, or against the other people, or against the institution, whatever it is that we're involved with. And so this is building negativity. Instead, if we can go in and say, now what can I do to change the circumstance? This person treats me very unkindly, and I get so angry, but I don't react. Guess what? You are reacting. And if you don't even show it on your face, which is doubtful, you're showing it in the energy pattern that's sent out to you. And it's an interesting thing that with many animals, that they can smell adrenaline. And people can, actually, too. Now, to a dog, for instance, if they smell adrenaline, they don't distinguish whether that's aggressive behavior that's about to happen or whether it's somebody who wants to run away from them. And so they make the safe assumption. They assume that you're going to attack them. And so in the same way with people, when you have fear or when you have adrenaline flowing, they may attack you because of the fear that you're having in the situation. And so you think, oh, I just want this person to leave me alone, but they just seem to go after me more and more and more. And it is because we are reacting. And so we get rid of the fear, we go inside, and we access this light where we are more than the body, and we are more than our worldly identification. And we access that, and we bring that light into the situation. Now, this doesn't mean being passive, but it does mean being peaceful. We mean no harm. We do no harm, but we also don't fade away into the woodwork. We can take a stand. We can stand up for that light as it directs us, and we can be powerful in that. And we can stand up for what's right in a situation, but we do it without attachment. And as we do that, we will be guided. We will be shown the way through this. And as we continue to attune ourselves inwardly, but let us do our work first. Let us get clear of the emotions. Let us get clear of the anger. Let us get clear of the hurt. Let us get clear of the fear. And then we'll see more clearly what to do in a particular situation. There are some work situations, there are some domestic situations that are very difficult. And sometimes it's actually suffocating the soul, it's killing the soul of an individual. It's the wrong place for them to be. And they need to make a change. But first, as I say, we must clear the decks. We must be clear within ourselves. And to do that, we must withdraw ourselves from this world and get some peace about the situation. Then we'll see more clearly. Does that speak to what you were asking,
Kathy?
Yes.
When you're on your retreat, are you going to allow tapes of yours to be replayed?
Yes. We'll have a little bit of both. We'll have some tapes played along with Mother's tapes. And I'm also asking that Larry and Peter give some talks during that time also. And so I think you'll enjoy them. They'll bring different perspectives, and they'll bring their own light to the party. I don't think Peter will mind if I tell on him a little bit, but he's saying, you know, I'm a professional speaker. I can get up and speak in front of hundreds of people. It frightens me to death to think of getting up in front of 8 people in the spiritual group and talking about it. I know he'll do a beautiful job, and I know you all treat him very well. It's really, I know for myself, it has helped me so much in my own sadhana. It puts you on the head of a pin in many ways. But that's good, you know. A piano does better if it's played. A bridge is tested by the things that are driven over the top of it. And it in a, not in a mechanical way, but in a biological way, things get stronger when they're tested, and so do we. And so it's good to get out and stretch those muscles and find out who we are in God, how God wants to express himself. His mother used to tell me, she said, pick a topic and have a few stories and then let it go and turn it all over to God and let him speak through you just as he will. And so sometimes I picked a topic, sometimes I have a few stories, and then I get in the middle or get started and it all gets taken out and none of it. It comes the way that I thought it was going to at all. It goes in a completely different direction. And so it's very interesting. It's quite wonderful. And the feeling of God's presence flowing through as you're speaking is so wonderful that sometimes somebody will say, well, was it a good talk? I said, well, You know, I enjoyed it hugely. I don't know if anybody else got anything out of it, but I learned so much. Sometimes I say things and I think to myself, I wonder if that's true. And then I stick with it and I meditate on it. And then God will show me, yes, that is true. Or sometimes, occasionally, I misspeak myself and I always try to go back. You know, it's this purification of the mind and going in and deciphering out what is of God and what is of the lower mind. And sometimes that little subconscious slip gets in there. You think, you know, that's not quite right. Or that's a piece of the truth, but that's not all of it. There's a little distortion in there. So it's a wonderful way to learn, and it's a wonderful way to attune your mind to that infinite consciousness. Believe it or not, I was always a very shy person growing up. I think in junior high, there's probably weeks where I spoke barely a dozen words. And so the idea of being in front of a group of people and speaking out my most intimate details in my spiritual path would not have been my first choice. I would have rather been behind the scenes. And I sometimes question Mother and her wisdom, not truly, but what in the world she is thinking about with me. But I trust in her wisdom and that it's the right thing for all of us. So I think they'll do a beautiful job. We'll also have tape of the month, and there will be a tape released each month. And so that will be available to all.
From you?
Yeah. And we also have Mother's tapes coming up, too, from the Truth Series. So I think it's one reason why Elaine had the inspiration to videotape, too, knowing this, that I was going to be gone for a year.
When are you going to start that?
The beginning of September. Currently, the plan is they need a few days to complete some projects that weren't completed before the current Lama moved in there. It's interesting. September 3rd is when I started this new life. Mm-hmm. So it could be on that day or very close to it. I thought that I'd go down and spend the first week, not in silence, just getting to know them and letting them get to know me. I think there will also be, and for people who want to take silent retreats there, I think there will also be the possibility, you know, availability of, it's a wonderful place, and they serve all the meals, and there's a charge for being there, but that, you know, people can come for some stays if they want to. And then we'll have the ones, and particularly the once a Saturday. And if people are coming down and would like to meditate, I'm sure we'll be able to arrange that.
Is there a charge for you?
Yes, there is. It's quite reasonable. He said they could either do it for free because they just are anxious to make it work anyway. But they suggested around $200 to $250 a month, and that includes all the food, all the meals, and everything. So it's very reasonable. Mm-hmm. And all of that is negotiable, but I think that's a very reasonable thing to ask. And I would like to support them. Mm-hmm. So it'd be an interesting experiment. I've never spent a year not speaking.
It's only going to be a year. I think everyone here knows me and Bob's story.
You want to tell them?
He was going to do it for just a year and ended up being 44.
44 years.
And he kept saying, when I speak, I will speak at a time when the world will change. And you will see tremendous changes in the world when I speak. So they're all, the disciples, waiting. It's just like Mother's book. And when I write my book, it's all this stuff, all this written out, and really make a splash on the world consciousness. It's exactly the same thing. And he never did. He kept saying, well, maybe a year from now I will speak. He came and went, you know, and people come and go too. Some disciples were very upset.
He gave a little hint in that he said the first time he spoke, all of creation came into being.
Oh, that's a clue.
So that's the kind of speaking he was talking about. Doesn't come with a human mouth.
Will you be communicating at all in writing or other forms?
I've had the idea, and I'm still testing it out, that once a month that I would respond to letters and perhaps email, although if I did the email, I would restrict people to writing one a month. So,
oh, my guess is paper.
David, how many pages?
Just one. Not just one page, but one email. So I'm still testing out that idea, but I think that that's a possibility. It seems all right. Part of the idea in what's called being a monist, someone who doesn't speak in India, they call it a monist, is there's so much life energy that goes out through speech. And how many words do we really say that really matter, that really count after all? We use speech for very trivial, frivolous things oftentimes. Sometimes I think people speak just to fill up the air, just because they're a little uncomfortable with things being quiet. And so the conserved life energy, and it just makes the mind more inward and allows it to be more inward. So that's part of the benefit. Lhari Mahasya used to say for the householder yogis that it's good to take 1 month a year in quiet solitude. But if you can't do a month, do a week. If you can't do a week, at least do 3 days. So it really is quite beneficial to our search, because we are so outward focused, and to learn to turn the mind inward. You know, at first it's difficult because the mind's restless and this life energy is restless. It's either tamasic, we're afraid we'll get depressed, or it's rajasic, we're just so active we can't imagine becoming still and quiet. But when we break beneath those layers of those surface tensions and we go into the vast vault of peace, and joy and bliss, what a reservoir we have, what experiences we may all partake of that are ours. They are our inheritance. They're there waiting for us. And yet, we're too busy. You know? Or we don't have the courage. Or we don't have the tenacity of will. It's not complicated. It really isn't. Sometimes the working out of it can get complicated, but the essence of it is not complicated at all. And the real thing is to try it, is to do it. Swami Chidananda, who visits Anandashram, he had D-I-N, do it now. If you're thinking about it, D-I-N, do it now. Good advice. It's good advice.
Will you be taking any work with you? Or books?
I don't know. Some books, mm-hmm. Certainly. Some... I don't know. You know, I can't anticipate what the agenda is going to be. God's mm-hmm. in charge of that. But some books, perhaps some writing.
World Enlightenment's a lot of work.
You know, there's some days that I spend that the life energy current just gets switched and it all is flowing in. And it's all flowing up and I'm just residing in that inward consciousness. And I simply, in the same way that a worldly person couldn't imagine being still, in those times I can't imagine being active. It just does not work that way. And Ramana Maharshi said it in this way. He says, in the same way that you can't stop your thoughts right now, you'll come to a place where you couldn't even think a thought if you you wanted to. You're just residing in the stillness. Now, to the worldly mind, they think, well, what would I want with that? I want my thoughts. But from that spiritual consciousness has come all creation. And by residing in it, when and as you need creation, it comes through you, it flows through. That's that faith, that's that knowingness, that everything is being supplied for you. It's like one of my favorite stories of the man on the train. So the conductor came along checking tickets. And he comes to this man, and this man's standing there with his baggage on his head. Conductor says, man, what are you doing? He says, you know, this train will arrive at the next destination whether you have the baggage on your head or it's on the floor. Why don't you set it down? Enjoy the trip a little bit. And that's the way we are. We carry all the baggage. We feel we're the doer. We're responsible for all. Now, what we're responsible for is attuning our mind to the light. It's not a path of laziness. That's a razor's edge, attuning your light to your mind to the light. That's very exacting, but that's all we're responsible for. It's where we focus our attention at. Then that light provides for everything else that we need. Trust in it. Believe in it. And allow that light to transform you. And then we can all reside in that consciousness together. And that's all the fun.
And David, when you go into the silence and you transcend your thought, and you're really in a super state of consciousness beyond the body, right?
Beyond body, beyond thought. Body is a part of it. You know, sometimes we think going beyond body consciousness means not having any consciousness of the body at all. Sometimes that's true. But also, and even a greater state of consciousness, is having an awareness of the body. But you feel as if the body is somehow an extension of this light consciousness, this divine consciousness. So it's not that you go out of the body. But the consciousness extends itself beyond the body. And you feel that the body is just a small part of who you are. So this idea of going outside of the body, this is an accurate one, nor necessarily a good one. That has more to do with the astral body leaving the body. In divine consciousness, the body is also part of the divine consciousness. And so it's not necessarily being oblivious or not knowing of the body at all. It's just putting it in its proper perspective. When Ramana Maharshi was getting older and perhaps close to death, one of the devotees said, Ramana, when you leave your body, what will we do? You'll be gone. And Ramana says, where can I go? Where am I not already? You see, he was in that universal consciousness. So he was within the beings of everyone who was there. He was within the temple. He was within the stones. He was within the flowers and the trees. Where is he not in that consciousness? It's the human mind that wants to say he's gone. And that's because we're so wedded to the body that we think if the body's not there, consciousness must not be. But that is falsity. It's not truth. So when we identify with universal divine consciousness, we recognize that we are a part of everything. Master wrote in one of his poems that he's the grass upon which people are walking. He's the flower that people are smelling. He is a part of it all. And that is true for anyone who is to identifying with their divine consciousness. People used to write Lari Mahasya, oh, I must come and see you. He said, why come see this bag of bones? I am present with you now. Open your inner eyes. See me. That is the greater truth. That is the greater darshan. It's knowing that absolutely, permanently true within your being. And we no longer deal with duality. We are only one. this is a state to be attained to. It's not just a thing of imagination, but you do have access to it, if we will but make the effort. Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty
of
Thy glorious presence,
of Thy glorious presence,
in every part of my being.
In every part of my being,
my heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet,
and surrender myself to Thee.
And surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with Thee.
Of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessings of peace be ever upon you. May His light ever shine within you. May you know Him always as your very self.